Now, the Australian census is conducted every 5 years and collects data, obviously, on a range of different aspects of people's lifestyles. But when we look at the community that would come under the queer umbrella, what kind of things should the government actually, I guess, firstly, be asking?
Yeah, well, I think it's important to remind ourselves just how important the census is, that the point really of the census is to count every person and every home in Australia in order to provide a snapshot of the social, cultural and economic makeup of our country. And because it happens regularly, it allows us to track change. And that's really important in terms of providing evidence for governments and policymakers and service planners to understand what changes are happening in the population and how to respond to them. So when we think about something like LGBTIQ people, certainly there are incredible changes that have happened over the course of the time that we've been collecting census data. So I guess there's two main things that we really are interested in the census collecting data on. The first is actually just counting LGBTQI people. It's often a surprise to people that we actually don't know how many people there are in the Australian population who identify as LGBTQ or who have a sex characteristic, a variation in sex characteristics, so intersex people. So one of the challenges in health service provision, for example, is we just don't know how many people there are. We don't know where those people are across the country. Now we can make some guesses and very educated guesses, but really the census is the main way that we do that. I think the other thing that's really important is that the census uses the information that they collect to inform healthcare provision, schools, local services, all those kinds of things. And without that information from this census, we've really lost the opportunity to inform the people who make decisions about chronic disease burden, which was one of the questions in the census this year, about the proportion of LGBTQI people who are veterans. And those are two particular things that I think are really important when we think about something like mental health. So we know that there's disproportionately high rates of mental health diagnosis and suicidal behavior among LGBTQI people. And the census would have provided hard evidence for something that we often talk about. But one of the challenges is that people say, okay, show us the evidence. The census was that opportunity.
Yeah, I just want to focus in on, you mentioned a couple of times there, obviously services. You know, this is not just about the information itself, but way these this information gets channeled into services that provide a real impact on the physical world, such as it were. What kind of services do you think would be best helped by receiving this data?
Well, in some ways, all of them. I mean, I think that if you think about knowing what proportion of the people in your local government area are experiencing particular chronic disease, knowing where you might need to provide particular kinds of acute services, being able to tell where you might be able to provide, where you might need to concentrate on providing preventative services. So the kind of the geography of it, the census is really valuable for providing that information. I guess when we think about something like LGBTQI people, we're also might be thinking about something like services to support trans and gender diverse people who are looking for medical support or services around IVF, for example, looking to provide support around fertility services. Understanding where the concentrations of LGBTQI people are can help local government and local councils and looking at those kind of local services, but also more broadly at state jurisdictions being able to look at where to concentrate the provision of services.
One of the more bizarre aspects, I think, out of this year's census, when we talk about the kind of the changes in this year's census, was I was speaking to somebody about last week, the non-binary option, the adding of a non-binary option when it came to gender. The bizarre aspect of that, I say, is because the ABS then turned around and said, well, you can put in the non-binary option and we will assign you male or female just arbitrarily after that one. So although they had the option there, it wasn't really applying to anything after the fact. Would it be fair to say when the government is approaching these kinds of issues, it is in that sort of way of going, okay, well, we've done something. We've done something. It's not going to make any kind of real practical impact. But look, we've given you the option. We've given you something at least.
Oh, Sean, it's hard to know quite what's gone wrong here, actually, because there's a bunch of things that I think have gone wrong. I think the first thing is there's just been a lot of confusion. The question that was asked is actually a sex question rather than a gender question. So I was asking people about what their sex was. So what was assigned to them at birth is essentially what that question is about. Non-binary, I think, is used in lots of different ways. The way that trans and genderverse people use the term non-binary is not the same way that the ABS is using it. And I think the real problem with that question is it's really not clear what the data will mean. I think the conversation you are having, I think I've seen all over social media and all over the media, is a lot of confusion about what exactly the question meant and how people should answer it. So for people who were trans and gender diverse and for people who identify as non-binary, and they're not necessarily the same groups, trying to work out what the question meant and then how to go about answering it in a way that felt true for them and also didn't create distress, because I think the question did create a lot of distress. So intersex people, so people who were born with variations in sex characteristics, that non-binary question doesn't cover their experiences. It doesn't cover most trans and gender diverse people who simply identify as either male or female in terms of gender. The question, I think, just creates lots of confusion, and I'm not sure what they're going to do with the data. And I think the real worry is that what will happen is that a number will come out at the end, non-binary equals X percentage, and that will be misrepresented as indicating the proportion of people in the Australian population who are trans and gender diverse. And that is absolutely not what the data does. I think the real irony here is that the ABS know how to do this right. They did a massive amount of very good consultation with community and with experts to develop something called a standard, which is a new set of questions on how to ask questions about sex and gender and variations in sex characteristics and sexuality. They developed a great resource. They've done lots of promotion around that. And then they ignored it in the census. So they haven't asked the questions in the way that they are telling the rest of us we should do it in our research. And I think that that's a real shame.
Well, actually, that's an excellent point. Just to lead to my final question, in terms of the resources you've seen provided there previously, we probably don't want to wait another 5 years and hope that they get it right next time. What do you think can be done in the conversation leading off of this year's census and the data it will provide? What do you think can be done in the near future to kind of improve services and the experiences of the community that we are discussing?
I think that's a great question, Sean. And I think one of the things that I found really heartening is how much of the response to the census this year was surprise from people that the census had gotten it wrong, that they couldn't have done a better job of this. Because I think actually the Australian population in general doesn't find these questions surprising. I think they expect that the census is collecting data on gender and sexuality, which it looked like that question was going to go in and didn't. So I think that in some ways the population is ready for it. I think services are asking for it because they know that there's a demand and an expectation that they are meeting the needs of sexuality and gender diverse people, and they need the data to help inform their services. So I think, you know, what's done is done. They've got the data that they've got, and they need to do some work to think about how they're going to frame it. But in terms of moving forward for the next census, I think what we're going to see happen is for most of us in Australia, we are going to find that we're being asked these questions more and more often when we engage with all kinds of services, including health services. We'll get used to those questions being asked. Everybody will know what the answer is. And by the time the next census rolls around, it will kind of be a little bit of a non-event, hopefully, unless we have some political interference. I feel like this is inevitable. I think they've postponed something rather than stopped it from happening.
Well, fabulous. Julie, thank you very much. Really do appreciate you joining us on this one.
You're welcome. Thanks, Sean.